Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Firstly, allow me to thank the minister for his presentation, and to thank the minister for the great job done on the industry, in the energy industry, the recent years under his leadership. My name is Andreas Milonas. I'm a lawyer by profession who have been advising energy companies and investors in regards to the energy environment, the regulations and the energy laws in Cyprus. And I'm truly honored to moderate today's panel on the investment opportunities in the energy sector. As the world accelerates toward a more sustainable and secure energy future, Cyprus finds itself at a strategic crossroads. Rich in natural resources, surrounded by active regional players, and increasingly open to innovation and technology. Today's discussion brings together a unique mix of expertise from global oil and gas leadership and clean energy venture capital to cutting-edge strategy and implementation. So let me briefly introduce the panelists. Ms. Christina Garbadaki, partner of Breakthrough Energy Ventures. Ms. Martina Opinzi, Head of North Africa and Levant Region of ENI. Dr. John Ardil, Vice President of Global Exploration, ExxonMobil. And Mr. Evan Polymeneas, Partner, McKinsey & Company. Of course, Minister, we'll be very delighted to have you on board and comment on the panelists. Now let's bring together the big picture. Natural gas in the energy transition, and how the energy system is evolving in the region of Eastern Mediterranean to redefine the energy strategy, as the minister mentioned. Dr. John Ardil, Cyprus emerging as a key player in the Eastern Mediterranean natural gas sector, attracting significant investment from global energy companies. What is the global significance of natural gas as an energy source in the transition to cleaner energy?
Okay, thank you for having me here today. It's great to be part of this discussion. So what I wanted to do was maybe as part of our panel, we had a great discussion on technology, hearing from, you know, US-based companies, European, and what that can do for Cyprus. Maybe with our panel, we can take a quick look at global energy and then quickly dial down to the Eastern Mediterranean and maybe end up at the end of the discussion with what are we doing in Cyprus? And why is that important for this group? And so just to put a little bit of a face on ExxonMobil and why I'm here, I run the global exploration business at ExxonMobil. So our company is very large. It's about $500 billion market cap, largest international oil company in the world. We produce oil and gas. We refine it. We're among the largest refiners in the world. And we're among the largest chemical businesses in the world. So the common thread there is that it's molecule focused. So our deep expertise is finding molecules, and these are hydrocarbons, and then extracting them, manipulating them, and they're in all aspects of modern life. So almost everything you touch is sourced from these. So that's why they're fundamentally important. As we look at the world, we look at the supply-demand balance for these molecule-based products. And so the fundamentals that drive that, we look on an investment outlook of decades typically. So most of our projects take about 10 years to find and bring on stream, and then they last for many decades. So we don't think in weeks to even years. We think in years to decades. And to just put some framing around that, so between now and 2050, population go from 8 to 10 billion people. Global energy demand in all forms will go up by about 15%. As an industry, we seek to reduce emissions by about 25%, and that's all energy sources, molecules, electrons. So it's very important that to keep economies running, increase quality of life, that we have a safe, stable supply of those. So we look globally. We develop typically in my company very, very large projects. So if you think just a few examples. So the largest LNG producer in the world is Qatar. 20 years ago, they didn't produce LNG. All of that's been done in the last 20 years. Guyana, if you've heard of that small country in South America, no oil and gas production, discovered in 2015. Today, they produce 700,000 barrels a day. In a couple of years, it'll be 1.3, 1.4 million barrels a day. So the fastest growing economy in the world today. And that's the sort of transformation. So it's over typically a decade. One key example is the United States. In 2005, largest importer of oil and gas. Today, the largest producer of oil and gas. And that's in that sort of 20-year time frame. So my job is to go look at where's the next Guyana, Permian, Qatar. And so we're in the East Med for a reason. So there's some key things there that we need for this to work. Partnership, so very close collaboration with the government and regulator. And that both involves Cyprus and the EU. Then the rocks have to be good. So we're not producing anything. We're going to find it and then extract it. It's extractive industry. So we'll talk on this panel a little bit about what investments we need to make to find it. And then the third key thing is commercial terms and regulatory. And in all those examples I gave you, a very close partnership existed between government and investor. The rocks worked, and then the commercial and regulatory environment was favorable for us to invest at scale. And I'll just close my comment with, we deploy about $25 billion a year, so the largest upstream investor by far. These projects are very expensive. So one of those FPSOs in Guyana is about $10 billion. We have 8 of them. We've invested in the last 5 years $55 billion in Guyana. So it's very expensive. But then once the production's on stream, it's also very lucrative. So think long time scale, absolutely needed by the world, the countries, huge economic benefit. But these take years to a decade to put in place. So I'll leave the framing at that for now. But that's why ExxonMobil's here to talk about oil and gas.
Thank you, John. Now let's bring it closer and focus on what's happening right here in the region of Eastern Mediterranean. Martina, Eni has recently entered into an agreement for the development of Kronos project through the Egyptian infrastructure. How do you see the Cyprus energy sector evolving in the next years? And what opportunities in the ANI project expected to create for Cyprus and the region?
Thank you for the question, Andrea. And first, let me thank His Excellency the Ministry to invite me to this valuable event. John set the scene of the oil and gas business, so decades to develop a discovery. What Eni, together with Cyprus, did is something I believe exceptional, because the project that I'm talking about today is going to be developed in a much shorter time frame than the 10 years that John was referring to. Indeed, last February, we signed an agreement which marks a breakthrough in the East Med for the energy business. This agreement was signed with Cyprus, Egypt, and the joint venture of Blocks 6, Eni and Total. This agreement is set the base for the development of the gas that we have discovered in 2022 in Cyprus, the so-called Kronos discovery. The volume of gas that we this project is a concrete step to create an hub in the East Med region, setting a change for Cyprus and also for the region itself. The volume of the gas is around 3 TCF and is far above what is the projected gas demand for Cyprus. So thanks to the development of this volume, we are not just making Cyprus a producer of gas, but also an exporter of gas. And the comprehensive framework that is covered by this agreement provides for a very quick development of those resources, because what we managed to agree on is to develop those volume of gas leveraging on the existing infrastructure, as George was describing before, that are well developed and have spare capacity in Egypt. So the gas will be produced from the field offshore and will be transported and processed into Egypt infrastructure and plants to be then liquefied and exported to the Damietta existing LNG plants into the European valuable market. So time is a key component of this project, and we have quite a tight schedule to bring gas to the market in the next three years. The value is also goes beyond this 3TCF, because we are unlocking a scheme that could bring also other resources that have already been discovered in the nearby fields still sitting in Cyprus. And for the local market, for Cyprus market, there is also an environmental component, because this gas will substitute the heavy fuels that are currently used to feed the power generation, reducing the carbon footprint of the country. So this project is represents for the country an example on how to tackle the energy trilemma. It enhances the energy security by diversifying the energy sources. It reduced the carbon footprints, and is designed to contribute to the competitiveness of the energy supply. Last but not least, I think that the value sits also on the cooperation and also the relationship, the interconnection that the country has been capable to build with neighboring country, which will position Cyprus in a key role in the region and also in the global market of energy.
Thank you, Martina. Before proceeding to the next panelist, it will be great and interesting to have Minister, your comments on that, on this. If you want to comment before proceed.
Indeed,
especially
on what I had here.
Yes, especially from Martina's.
Yes, indeed, the advantage that Kronos has versus other discoveries is because of the proximity to infrastructure. And the infrastructure, despite being in the neighboring country of Egypt, you understand that we landed this the so-called host government agreement, which is providing the details how you commercialize the product coming out of Cyprus. Because the producer is Cyprus, but the processor, I mean, the processing will be happening onshore in Egypt. And it's very important here to mention that Cyprus is a source of energy that sits within the EU. And nowadays, you understand, with the Russian gas not flowing to the EU, you understand that every source of supply for the EU is very important. We are not talking about the huge quantities sitting in the EEZ of Cyprus, but they are important enough in order for Europe to consider them as a new source of supply that is within the EU. And this is what we are trying hard. Certainly the companies, they are the investors. We are in a sharing agreement, let's say, with the investors. But at the same time, we try to help them. And the expectation, at least from our side as Republic of Cyprus, is that we will see the first gas on in the markets. Martina's keeps talking about the next 3 years. The President Christodoulidis keeps telling her and Claudio Descalzi, the CEO of ENI, that it will be in 2027.
Thank you for your insight.
Sorry, Martina, but I had to mention that.
Yes, just maybe make one comment to set the context. And this is, Martina and I live oil and gas resources every day. That's our job. But it's sometimes difficult to put these numbers into context. So I'd mentioned the super large resources in the world. So Qatar is an example. The North Field in Qatar is 900 TCF, trillion cubic feet of gas. That supports becoming the largest global exporter of LNG. The two fields that we looked at earlier, Zohr and Leviathan Tamar in Egypt and Israel, are each around 30 TCF, round numbers. And so that's, it's not 900, but it's sufficiently large to put in infrastructure, pipelines, and then tie that into the Egyptian grid and the LNG terminals. The minister showed the table of resource numbers that we have in Cyprus, and all of those numbers are single digits. So remember, 900, 30, and we're dealing with multiple fields in the single digits. Martina mentioned 3 TCF. The order of magnitude is very important. We're in a very expensive deep water development environment, so we want to get those molecules developed as quickly as possible. If we had 900 TCF or 30 TCF, we'd be having a different conversation today. We'd be building LNG terminals and all sorts of other things. What we're dealing with, small to modest resources that we have to aggregate very efficiently, leverage the existing infrastructure it's already invested in. So Martina's comments about tying back through Zohr in that case, extremely important to take away from this. And we're still in the exploration and appraisal phase, so we could find more. We could find bigger resources. That's why we're drilling this well called Electra. But what we're dealing with today is a small to modest resource that takes a lot of integration, leveraging neighbors. And so it's really important that we've got that context as we think about timeline to production, how we produce it, standalone versus tie-in, all of this. So just want to clarify, make sure everyone's on the same page with the resource.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Christina, Cyprus is currently rolling out energy smart meters island-wide to modernize the electricity distribution network and improve energy management. What opportunities do you think will open up with this new infrastructure? And have you seen business models in the U.S. that will be able to be applied in Cyprus?
Thank you, Andrea. Hi, everyone. Great to be here. Thank you for including me in the panel. This is a transition because we're moving from molecules to electrons. What I do every day is invest in energy technology startups, right? Mainly in the renewables and sustainability space. So I used to work in oil and gas, but now I spend most of my time in the electron space of power generation, storage, and transmission. And when I look at the investment opportunities in Cyprus on the power side, there's some significant infrastructure developments that have happened that are opening the door for future investments over the next 3 years in the short term and even shorter. We have significant renewable penetration in solar, which also comes with its challenges because we have also significant curtailment of that power. And I think that the immediate short-term investment opportunity for Cyprus is storage. And I was very, very glad to hear the minister talk about the $45 million incentive scheme. And then and that's on the supply side. And then on the demand side is what Andreas mentioned on the smart metering being included and being put into the grid as we speak. So in 2025 is when 150,000 smart meters are going to be put onto the Cyprus grid, and in 3 years, 500,000 smart meters. And that opens up the opportunities for what you can do with demand-side technologies, where you're optimizing the energy management and the demand side of how residential users and industrial users are basically consuming power. So to get into a little bit more specific into those two opportunities and where I see the growth for Cyprus in supply and demand, on the supply side, we already know that lithium-ion is dominating energy storage. If you look at California, let's just look at the region or a state that has similar weather, at least, to Cyprus. almost every single utility scale solar project that's being built is solar plus storage. And if you look at the residential sector in California, 60% of homes include storage. This is a market that has been developing since the early 2000s, picked up in 2010, and driven by the dramatic reduction in storage costs. There's no reason why the same numbers of penetration couldn't take place in Cyprus as well, with the right amount of deregulation of the power sector to improve pricing competition and private actors, and also with the right amount of license and speed for licensing and permitting. Because right now, if you ask anyone in the U.S. what is the biggest stumbling block on bringing solar plus storage online, it is permitting. So there are active things that can promote and increase the amount of private investment that can come into that space. So that's on the supply side. Just going on, I think I'll pause there.
Yeah.
Talk about demand later.
Thank you. Thank you, Christina, for your insights. Now, let's go back to the role of the natural gas in the energy transition and how does it coexist with renewables and other clean energy sources. Evan, what have you seen work best in the market you advise?
All right. Well, thanks for having me. It's been a great discussion so far, and I'm really looking forward to the rest of it. I'm actually going to combine the two topics. I think Christina's remarks were excellent. We do a lot of research similar to what John was articulating. Our numbers are very similar in terms of where gas demand is going. We're talking about a world where energy, there's no question about that, energy consumption is only going up and to the right. And there's parts of the world globally where energy intensity per capita use of energy is just going to go up. Well, actually, we do projections all the way to 2050. We don't see places like China or India peaking in per capita energy use. So we're just going to need more. And when it comes to natural gas, even when we run projections about meeting net zero in 2050, in the foreseeable future, you need more natural gas and higher quality natural gas to do that. So we don't see natural gas demand peaking anytime soon, which means we need high quality resources for it. Its role is critical. We always say, one of the underappreciated effects, and it's happening in Cyprus, it's happening in a lot of Southern Europe, is we actually waste a lot of the renewable production we're making. I think the numbers are in Spain and Italy and Greece, probably we curtailed that, the term Christina used, which means literally, just to put it in plain terms, we're just throwing it away, probably 4x what we curtailed last year, and it's only going up. Which to us means two things when we run the numbers. Actually, natural gas generation coexists with renewables. It's very important. Natural gas is one of the most flexible forms of power generation we have. We need storage, and we need the right framework, both on the investment, private actors investing in energy storage with a clear regulatory and market framework that is critical to the success. The cost of the technology, we used to say when I was studying for electrical engineering, we used to say you can't store power. That's the form. You can store fuels and molecules. You cannot store power. Well, actually, you can store power now, and with costs only improving on the technology side, and actually some very promising new technologies coming on energy storage, a lot of which Christina is very familiar with because her fund invests in them. That actually relates to the role of natural gas. The only addition I will throw to this is, you know, if I were speaking to you maybe a year ago, I would have told you a lot of electrification happening, a lot of increase in power demand, which necessitates more natural gas and more storage and more renewables. I'm now here to tell you that that has only increased in the last year because of the growth of AI and data centers. A lot of investments here in the U.S., a lot of investments in Europe. In data center capacity, we are actually asking even more questions about how we power that demand. And, as you probably have seen, we can talk about a lot of the announcements. Natural gas has a key role in that, as well as storage and renewables. So go faster, clearer frameworks, attract private investment. You need to even aspire to drive the economic development and technological innovation that we're talking about.
Thank you, Evan.
I want to, because Evan mentioned data centers and obviously it was very much mentioned on the prior panel. We see a lot of demand for these hyperscalers to fuel the power of those data centers with green power. and green electrons. Right? We're seeing them willing to pay high prices for firm baseload power contracts that are clean, and that can also be an opportunity of how do you leverage the different resources that Cyprus has at its potential to present a clean power source for those data centers.
Thank you, Christina. Martina, it would be interesting to hear your perspective on these. Do you see natural gas and renewable energy as competing with each other, or can they work together? How could this cooperation benefit Cyprus, and what opportunities are there for gas projects as the world moves more forward to renewables?
I basically have the same view of Ivan. I believe that renewable gas are not necessarily in competition one to each other, but in a world where energy consumption is increasing, and especially in the short term, I see the role of gas being complementary to the role of renewable gas. Is the fuel with the hydrocarbon with the lower CO2 content. So I believe that Cyprus as well as the rest of the world need gas in the transition to a complete green energy system.
Thank you, Martina. John, we have heard Martina's perspective in regards to the recent Cyprus and Egypt agreement, which gives a way to leverage Egypt's existing infrastructure for the development of Kronos and Aphrodite gas. How can regional cooperation and industry partnerships be enhanced to ensure that sustainable development of natural gas?
Yeah, so a very consistent message I think you'll hear. It's really not molecules or electrons. It's all of the above. And when you break down the global energy supply and demand, it quickly gets a lot more complex when you go into countries and regions. So if you're in Norway, most of it's hydro, very small populations, quite unique. Different parts of the world, United States, have leveraging molecules very heavily, but also huge amounts of renewable capacity. Europe really went in a very aggressive path to transition away from molecules towards electrons and subsidize that rapid transition. And once you break all of these down, it comes into three factors: energy security, affordability. I mean, you can have aspirations, but if you can't afford them, they don't work. And then emissions intensity. And so it's solving for all of those at a country and regional level. So when we look at the Eastern Mediterranean and Cyprus, relatively small population. When you think about major population growth areas, it's China, India, Africa. From a growth, OECD growth's relatively small, but it's still a very important and growing market. We're very lucky to have gas hydrocarbon system works there. So leveraging that, we have renewable resources, so it's great to leverage those. And the art is getting the interplay right. And so when we build data centers, it needs to be very stable, uninterrupted power supply. And so renewables are wonderful, but there's that interruption that we either have to store the electrons, and that technology is coming along, or somehow integrate it with baseload natural gas. And so that's a problem we're solving in the United States right now. And just an example of how we're doing it in the, so this is southern United States, Permian, lots of oil production, so 13 million barrels a day coming out of the U.S., about 60, 65% of that's coming out of the unconventional, and that's all new in the last 20 years. A lot of associated gas, and we move that energy via pipelines, so it's molecules, either oil or gas, through pipelines. In Texas, as an example, we have a huge amount of wind and solar generated capacity. We don't try and transmit that from the generation sites in West Texas to the population centers in East Texas. We actually use it in the oil field. So the oil field drilling rigs, completion rigs, pumps, everything's run by electricity instead of traditionally burning natural gas. So as we don't have to transmit the electrons, and then we move molecules, which is much more efficient. No transmission losses. And then once we get to the Gulf Coast, we used to, and these are very, very large refining petrochemical plants, a million barrels a day capacity, largest in the world. So the way we used to generate heat and power there is to burn natural gas. Today, what we're looking at doing is refiring all of that with hydrogen. So it would be what's called a pre-combustion carbon removal. So two ways you can take the carbon out of the system. You can take it out, instead of burning CH4, which is methane, you can reform that into hydrogen, H2 and CO2. You can put the CO2 stream into the ground. It's pure, store it, burn hydrogen, so zero emissions power generation. The alternative is at the flue post-combustion, you can try and capture that very small volume of CO2 with an amine capture system, very expensive. And so we're using pre-combustion, more elegant, very expensive still. These are $10 billion hydrogen plants. So remember the $2 billion electricity line? Multiples of that. So, and what we don't want to do is have to rely on government subsidy for that to work. So we're working right now to see if we can get this plant off the ground with the Inflation Reduction Act. Using incentives and carrots rather than sticks. So a different approach, Europe versus United States. And the technology along decarbonization at the oil field, using green electrons, moving molecules, transforming molecules, that's the solution set that we're investing in. And natural gas is the primary feedstock for fertilizer, so all the food that 8 billion people eat, natural gas is a key element of that. It's a primary fuel source. So electrification, electricity sounds great. It's not a primary fuel. We have to generate it either from burning something, usually carbon-based molecules, turning something like a wind turbine or photovoltaics or atomic energy, and then storing it. So it's working with all of this solution set to solve a regional and country level, and there are massive investments to make this happen. And they really have to be viable at a market-based scale without incentives, because even the European Union, as big as it is, cannot afford to fund at a government level a decarbonization of the whole energy system. No company or country or set of countries, including the United States, can do that. So it's going to be innovation using all of these energy sources with a lot of new and emerging technology. And that's something that exists in Cyprus, maybe a smaller scale, but all the key elements are there to take advantage of renewables, gas molecules, and then export, and integration with neighbors is absolutely critical.
Thank you for this perspective. Curtailment of solar energy is already a challenge. Let's now turn to the opportunities around energy storage and smart grid integration. Christina, can you comment on some of the investment opportunities you see in energy storage and their applicability in the Cyprus market?
Sure. I think I covered a little bit about storage already with basically going after conventional technology and lithium. Maybe it's a good time to talk about the demand side.
Yeah, and feel free also to comment any investment opportunity you see, especially in the technology side and stuff.
Yeah, I think that's where, because we're limited on time. So where I really want to focus is I spend my time working with technology and startups, and that's a lot of what the last panel touched on, right? There is significant growth in Cyprus with now venture capital groups being formed, 33 is, then of course Kinesis Ventures, which is here, who are deploying capital into startups in the region. Fintech and blockchain, we already heard, they have a significant presence. There's an opportunity for energy startups as well to have a place within this ecosystem, both on the molecules and on the electrons side. And there's an opportunity for Cyprus to become a pilot ground. Right. How do you pilot test these technologies, either on an isolated grid or in a technology that can take methane and convert it, if there is an opportunity to do such a thing? So how do you create incentives as a government to enable pilot testing for these startups? Because one of the key things that entrepreneurs are going after is early customers and pilot results. Cyprus market is small. We already talked about it. But if you create an incentive for those companies to be able to get results on their pilots and on their technology, that's one approach that you can attract them to come in addition to everything that was mentioned on the last panel around deregulation, ease of banking, ease of legal documents. But can you have in the energy sector in particular a physical reason to run pilot tests and get results and early customer validation? And that could be in a way to attract these new technologies on both sides of the sectors to come in.
Thank you. Evan, can you comment a bit with just 1 minute, the investment and technology opportunities that you get most excited about, especially in storage and energy efficiency?
I'm not going to belabor the point. Christina did an excellent job. We talked about a myriad of opportunities. The conclusion is, I think Cyprus is a great proving ground, a great fertile ground for investment in all these things. We talked about the importance of infrastructure. It was teed up before. You also need it for the oil and gas resources. It's a huge bottleneck. Anything that I would call midstream is a big bottleneck, even in this country. Talked about grids and interconnection. We'd probably need 3x or 4x the grid capacity we have today to even have a shot at net zero. So the importance of the interconnector project that was shown, and in the Cyprus grid itself, so that we can integrate resources at a much faster pace. It probably takes 4 or 5 years to build new renewable or storage capacity, so that's critical. And then the demand side, well, you cannot neglect energy efficiency and the even when you do EV charging, the ability to control and manage when the charging is happening. So all of these ideas, I think we need all of them, particularly in an island grid, and they will be great investment opportunities as long as the capital formation happens quickly.
Thank you. Thank you, Evan. I see that we're run of time, and Mr. Bornoz has mentioned me already twice. So before we close, I would like to have a final sentence, optimistic round. Just one reason why you were optimistic about the future of Cyprus in the energy sector. Christina.
I think it's because of the diverse set of energy resources. I think there's opportunities across the entire spectrum of energy production, and that's exciting.
Thank you. Martina?
I think it's the geographical strategic position and the capability of opening and expanding the boundaries versus the global energy system.
Thank you. John?
I would just say the government, the ministry, is making it very attractive for both of our companies, and we're leading in the world in this space to come and invest in Cyprus. We're investing significantly. We're drilling, these wells are $100 million each. So, you know, one this month, one next month, as we're actively investing and working very hard to bring these molecules, the discovered molecules that Eni is working on, to bring to the market through Zohr as quickly as possible. And we're actively exploring and appraising the resources right next door, and we're working together to make that happen as quickly as possible.
Thank you. Evan?
It's great resources, very talented and entrepreneurial people, and it's a location in the world as a gateway to the EU. So those are great.
Thank you. Minister, last comment from you?
Yes, just I think we covered well the subject, and the one thing that we realized quite quickly in Cyprus is that we cannot exclude any source of supply, and I'm talking about energy resources. And certainly we are learning from the mistakes possibly that Europe has made by switching very quickly to renewables because of their own reasons. At the time that the technology was not there in full, and still may not be there. And if you are the first entering a certain technology, you understand that you need to invest heavily, and this goes into your industry and makes your industry non-competitive. This is what was realized pretty quickly in Europe. And now I think the direction, and this is what we discussed in the European Council, is that we need to slow down in order for the technology to start developing whilst we'll be using other sources of energy like the natural gas. Cyprus has been blessed that has lots of sun, so there is quite some solar dynamic. There is less wind dynamic. However, we have the natural gas as well. The quantities, despite being of natural gas, despite being on the low side of things, still, they are a lot for a small country like Cyprus. And certainly what we are doing going forward is to develop renewables. The technology is developing, and whilst we are developing renewables, At the same time, we are reducing the conventional power generation because of the emissions, because of it's being very costly. So what we are trying hard, we need to increase the renewables, the electricity coming from renewables into the mix of electricity in Cyprus by reducing the conventional power generation.
Thank you. I would like to thank our panelists, Christina, Martina, John Evans. Thank you for your insights. Minister, thank you for your comments, your insights, and the great job done under your leadership. And of course, Nicolas, thank you for this great event.